I am delighted to be here. I've heard about the OUBSU and Max Barnett and the great BSU work here. It's a real privilege for me to be with you. And I pray that when we leave here tonight that you'll have something that you will take with you outside of this room and onto the campus, back to your dorms or your apartments or wherever you're living, and you'll take it with you, and then it will become a part of your life. I'll probably not say anything here tonight that in some ways you do not already know, but I want to reinforce for you something that probably, in a general way, you already have a grasp of. Have you ever heard of those things? You know, you sort of have an idea about, and you may have a grasp of, and especially in the Christian faith, we have our own language. You know, we have our own terminology. Now we're going to come to grips with one of the most exciting biblical concepts that you'll find in the entire Bible. It is the concept of the blessing. The word blessing, or to bless or bless, is a word that we use a lot. I talked to several men today on the telephone, and just about without exception, as they hung up, they say, "God bless you, Claude." You know, when someone sneezes, what do we say? We say, "Bless you." I want to know, what does it mean when we use a term like that? It has become very popular. It's something we use not only in Christian circles, but we use it in a thing so common as sneezing. I want to know, what does it mean? And how does it relate to my life? For you see, it is a biblical concept. And it's one that comes across very strongly. Now, I'm not going to give you the steps that I've come to this definition, but I have a friend, he's an evangelist, his name is Jay Strack, and when he's preaching, he says, if you've got pen, pencil, lipstick, or mascara, take it out and take this down and use it to take notes with. So if you've got pen, pencil, lipstick, or mascara, you can write something down. Here, I want to give you a definition of bless, or the blessing, all right? Are you ready? Now, I'll repeat this once, and if you don't get it first time, we'll do it again. But I figure all of you are taking shorthand, right? And you know how to do it. Here we go. A blessing is a positive and powerful communication through spoken word or a specific action that influences and impacts the direction and destiny of another person's life. You got that, didn't you? All right. I'm going to say it again, okay? You can just work. We'll get it. I want you to get this. A blessing is a positive and powerful communication. A curse is a negative and powerful communication, okay? A blessing is a positive and powerful communication through a spoken word or a specific action that influences, impacts the direction and destiny of another person's life. Have you got that? Now, I want you to get that. Now, blessing is very important. It's a very important biblical concept. We ask ourselves, how can we be blessed? All of us want that, don't we? We want something very positive and very powerful communicated to us that influences and impacts our direction and destiny for that which is good. How many of you want that? Raise your hand, okay? All right? How do you get it? Now, in Christian circles, in Baptist circles, and all other circles, we get it in our minds that we have to earn it. Okay? We have to earn it. We have to earn the blessing of God. I heard about a boy. This little boy is a Catholic boy, and he was living in the convent with the sisters, and he came to the time in his life when he wanted a bicycle, and he wanted it very, very badly. I mean, he wanted a bicycle, and he went to the nun, and he said, Mother Superior said, I really want a bicycle, and how can I get a bicycle? And she said, I'll tell you what you do. She said, you go back, and you promise God that you'll be good for 6 weeks if he'll bless you with a bicycle. He said, you mean if I go back and promise God that I'll be good for 6 weeks, he'll bless me with a bicycle? She said, yes, he will. So the little boy went back, and that night in his room, he got down on his knees, and he lifted up his head, and he said, oh, God, I promise you that I'm going to be good for 6 weeks if you'll just give me a bicycle. bowed his head and he looked back up and he said, "Scratch that, God, I'll never make 6 weeks." He said, "God, if you'll bless me with a bicycle, I promise you I'll be good for 4 weeks." He dropped his head and he looked back up and he said, "Strike that one, I'll never make 4 weeks." He said, "God, I promise you that I'll be good for 2 weeks. If," and he didn't even finish the sentence, and he looked up and he said, "God, just forget it, I'll never even make 2 weeks." And he looked over in the corner and there was a statue of Mary. He grabbed the bed sheet, he ran over and wrapped that statue up in that bed sheet and dove under the bed. And after a few seconds, he stuck his head back out from under that bed and he said, "God, if you ever want to see your mother alive again..." Is that not the funniest thing you ever heard? Sometimes we get it in our minds that God is in, "Let's make a deal." Well, folks, that's not the way God operates. I want to tell you how you get the blessing of God on your life. Listen to me very carefully. Here's the way you do it. This is so easy. Take God at His word. Take God at His word. And when you take God at His word, He's going to bless you. And then you, in turn, can be a blessing to someone else. And what I want us to do for our Bible study time, with that in mind, how you are blessed is by taking God at His word. And how you become a blessing is also by taking God at His word. I want to talk to you tonight about the first part of the blessing. It is a powerful communication through a spoken word. Our Bible text are James chapter 3 and Proverbs chapter 18. So let's look first at Proverbs 18. This is a passage of Scripture that you're probably very familiar with. Proverbs 18:21. The writer of Wisdom Literature says, "The death and life are in the power of the tongue." You got that? Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Wisdom Literature of the Old Testament. When I come to the book of James, the great practical application of the principles of the Christian faith, I find again that principle, that word, that life and death are in the power of the tongue, elaborated on by James in chapter 3. So look at verse 1 and follow along as I read out of my text. You follow in yours. He said, "My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater judgment. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and also able to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great, and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor or the steersman wishes. Even so the tongue is a little member, boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast, and birds, and serpents, and of things in the sea is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue no man alone of himself can tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father. Therewith we curse men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be." Let's look for a few moments at the power of the spoken word. The Lord has called every one of His children with whom He has blessed life everlasting and the power to communicate. He has called us to bless, to communicate. To communicate the positive to the life of others. And because of that, He calls us into responsibility regarding our own ability to speak. The power of the spoken word. you and I have responsibility for our ability to communicate. James makes this very clear. He uses the illustration of the teacher. He said, don't seek the position of a teacher. Now, you see, you've got to understand the background behind that, because like in probably the churches where many of you grew up, in our church, we're always looking for people to teach Sunday school classes. Well, what James is talking about here is this. There was a sense of honor. There was a sense of esteem for people who taught in the church in the days of James. And some of them were just using it as a position to get their own ego needs met. And as a result, they were not being careful in the use of the spoken word, the power of the spoken word. Also understand that in the days of James, they didn't have the entire New Testament written. And so they were coming out of the oral communication of the apostles and the prophets against the backdrop of the Old Testament. And so everything that was said was very important. And James said to them, don't seek the position of a teacher in order that you might use it for your own ego need, because what you say, you are held responsible for it. Jesus magnified that when he said in Matthew 12:37, by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. You see, words are important. And you and I are held responsible for the words that we speak. And we're also held accountable for them. I read recently about the two young airmen who were out in the sea outside of Hawaii on December 7, 1941. All of us have been made aware of what's going on in our world regarding the war in the Persian Gulf. These two young men, they were watching the radar. And as they watched the radar, they saw these specks come up on the radar. And they got excited. And soon the radar was covered. 300 airplanes on the radar screen. 7 o'clock in the morning. They run and find the only officer on duty, who was a second lieutenant. And they said to him, come quickly. We have airplanes all over the radar screen. The young lieutenant thought about it for a few moments, and he concluded that those airplanes were coming from the mainland. They were coming from California. And here are his words to those two soldiers. Don't worry about it. 54 minutes later, the Japanese struck in Pearl Harbor. And two hours after he said, don't worry about it, 8 battleships were rendered useless. The airfields, they were ruined. The planes, they were rendered nearly useless, most of our fleet. And 2,400 people were dead. His words, don't worry about it, he was responsible for what he said. And he was accountable for what he said. You and I are always immediately responsible for what we say. We will be ultimately accountable for everything that we say. The words that we use, we must be cautious in what we say. You see, loose-lipped usage of the tongue is not wise. In Proverbs it says, in the Good News for Modern Man version, it says, turn off the flow. You're talking too carelessly. We need to be careful and control in exercising our prerogative, our God-given ability to communicate, because we are immediately responsible and we will be ultimately accountable. There's no exception to that. No exception to that. Now let me show you the reason where we are responsible. The reason is the power of the tongue. James, he gives clear understanding about that, the power of the tongue. He goes to two illustrations and shows how the little controls the greater. Illustration number one, the bit in the horse's mouth. How many of you have ever ridden a horse? That's most of us. How many of you are sorry you rode the horse the first time? Yeah, that's some of us. I remember the first time that I was taken out into the country. I wasn't raised in the country. I was raised in the foothills of the Great Smoky Mountains, but I was raised in a suburban kind of area, community. But we'd go out into the country occasionally, and I had a friend who lived down the street, and he said, go with me out into the country. And so we went out in the country, and he said, we're going to ride horses. Boy, that sounded great to me. The only horse I'd ever been on was those kind that have a pole that runs right up to its back. You know, and goes like this. That'd be about the only kind of horse that I'd ever ridden, with music playing as you go along. And I could just see myself out there like the Lone Ranger or Roy Rogers, somebody like that, sitting up on a horse with a saddle and a bridle, you know, and silver all over the saddle. I could just see it. I mean, I had all imaginations of grandeur. Well, what really happened was this. We went out there, and there was this paint horse. I will call him a paint because I like Tonto, you know. That's what he had. Scout was a paint horse, and he said, this boy said, let's ride him. Well, you got to understand, I was just a boy, and I was just about this tall then. And so he said, we got to get you up on the horse. And I thought, well, when we get the saddle on, it won't be any problem. Well, you know, he didn't have a saddle. Problem number one. I said, well, when we get the bridle on, it'll be easier. Problem number two. You're right, no bridle. What he did was took a rope and made a bridle of it and tied it around the horse's nose. And he said, now, Claude, get on. Get on. And I thought, sure. That's a great idea. Why don't you help me? And I'd get a hold of the mane, and I'd jump up, you know, and I couldn't. Finally, he got a hold of one of my legs and pushed me up. And when he did, I got my other leg about halfway up. Now, a cornstalk is an important thing if you're riding horses. You know why a cornstalk's important? Because when your leg's about halfway up over the back, you're holding on with the mane trying to get the rest of the way up. The guy with you takes a cornstalk, and he hits a horse with it. And when he hits a horse with a cornstalk, you know what happens with a horse? It takes off down through the field. I mean, full speed ahead. There was no one in control of that horse. I want you to know, no one. And I was praying, oh, God, get me off this horse. And about that time, I fell. I'd held on as long as I could hold. No one was in control of the horse. The next time I got on the horse, I got back on that horse. But it's only because out of desperation. I always figure if you've got a great fear, and I had a great fear right then, the only way to conquer it is just to get on it. And so I got back on the horse and rode around in a short circle. Next time I got back on the horse, you know what it had? It had a saddle. It had a bridle. And it was trained horse. And you could take that bridle and just lay it across that horse's neck. And when you did, you lay it this way, the horse just turned this way. You lay it this way, and it just turned. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. If I wanted to stop it, all I had to do just pull back, and it'd stop. If I took off running just as hard as it could run, and I wanted to stop it, I'd just pull down on it, and that bit in that horse's mouth was... You see, with that bit, you could control that whole horse's body. James says, a little bit controls a whole horse. Then he uses another illustration. The illustration of a ship. A great ship that was driven by the wind. Sailboat. Only a big sailboat. And he says, with a fierce wind, it moves through the water. But you know what controls it? A little rudder. It's the mighty wind that moves it, but it's a little rudder that controls it. And he says, the big ship is controlled by the little rudder. James says, the little controls the greater. That brings us to this conclusion. The power of the tongue is an undeniable reality. Genesis 1, God said, let there be light, and there was light. Through the power of the spoken word, there it was. You can follow all the way through the creation story, and by words, the creation and the formation of the earth came into being. Study the life and the ministry of Jesus. Mark chapter 1, verses 15, it says, he came proclaiming the good news. The Bible tells us in Mark chapter 1 that by the spoken word, demons were brought out of those who were demonically possessed. It is by the spoken word that those who were bound by sin were forgiven. And they said, you can't do that. He said, which is easier? To say unto him, son, thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say to the paralytic, in the name of the Lord, rise up and walk. He spoke forgiveness. He turned and he spoke healing. And the man rose up and walked. Through the power of the spoken word. The power of words is an undeniable reality. Go over in John. You'll find there's Lazarus. Lazarus is dead. He's been dead for some period of time. Dead long enough that nobody wanted to get close to it. All right? Jesus comes along, and the Bible says that he cries out and he says, Lazarus, come forth. He didn't go over and get hold of Lazarus and pull him out, but through the power of the spoken word, Lazarus came forth. Now listen to me. Young person, we live in a society that has polarized our thinking to believe that all the power is in the activism of life. You've got to be active. You've got to be doing this. You've got to be doing that. You've got to be doing the other. That's where all the power is polarized. It's polarized to those who are the shakers and the movers of our society, and we picture them as great activists. But don't ever forget, the enormous power of the spoken word is an undeniable reality. And I'm going to show you in just a moment, people's lives, their destinies, have been influenced by the power of the spoken word. The reason you're responsible for what you say is because of the great power that is invested in the spoken word. Third thing, let's look at the results of the spoken word in James. There's two types, the blessing and the curse, the destructive and the constructive. He talks about the destructive in verses 5 and 6. Verses 5 and 6 of chapter 3, he said, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindles. The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members. It defiles the whole body, sets on course, the course of nature, set on fire, the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell. The Bible says that the tongue is powerful for destructive purposes. We curse God's creation with a tongue. It's an unruly evil, full of poison. The power to be destructive with the spoken word. The power of death is in the tongue. He's in the Arizona State Prison now. When he was a little tyke, running around, if there was something that he had hold of and someone tried to take it away from him, he screamed and scratched and hollered for his fault for his own rights. He pulled and he tugged. So when he was about 2 years old, one of the members of the family named him Mean Mike. Mean Mikey. Mean Mikey lived up to that. He'd get in a scrap and they'd say, you better watch out, there comes Mean Mikey. And it wasn't long before Mean Mikey lived up to his name among the preschoolers, among the first graders. As he grew bigger and grew older, Mean Mikey began to serve him well, his name did, because he played linebacker on the football team. And because he was Mean Mikey, he was a bad, bad linebacker. The only problem with Mean Mikey was this, he didn't know how to get along with anybody. His relationships were pitiful. Relationships with his family, his schoolmates, his teachers, everyone. His relationships were pitiful. Mean Mikey was a bad dude. Wasn't too long to Mean Mikey was going the mean way. Wasn't too long to Mean Mikey had gone too far. And right now, Mean Mikey, living out his name, is in the Arizona State Prison. Folks, I want to tell you something. What you say to people does make a difference in their lives. On this campus, you can be negative. You can be demeaning, and you can be destructive. Think about how words have destroyed people. About 60 years ago, 60, 55 years ago now, nearly 60, there was a man that rose up in Europe. He had a unique ability. He had the ability to speak. And as he spoke, he swayed people. And as he spoke and swayed groups, the groups grew larger and larger and larger. And soon, this man, not by military genius, not by political prowess, but by his ability to communicate and sway millions of people with words, led a whole nation and perpetrated one of the greatest travesties that has ever happened in the human race, because Hitler became the madman leader that he was because of his ability to communicate. The power of words were destructive to the whole nation. It's true in people's lives. It's true in nations. It can be true on this campus. It can be true anywhere. There's power in the spoken word, destructive power. But I don't want to stop there. Not only do we curse, we bless. There's life in the power of the spoken word. Look, it is constructive. The Bible says it gives life. The Bible in the book of Proverbs talks about good words, their health, their words of blessing, encouragement. A couple of weeks ago, we had a man at our church by the name of Harry Dent. Harry was a special counsel to President Richard Nixon, and after that to President Ford, and prior to President Bush being President Bush, when he was in other arenas of politics, he was a special counsel to him, and now he's a special advisor to George Bush. Harry Dent was raised in the home of an alcoholic. His daddy was not one who was pronouncing good things upon him, but he had a mother and a grandmother and a granddaddy. Wherever he went in a group, his mother would look at him, and she would say, "This is Harry Shuler." His name's Harry Shuler Dent. "This is Harry Shuler. Harry Shuler's a great young man. God has great things in store for Harry's life. God's going to do something great with Harry. Harry's so gifted." And she just kept pronouncing good things on Harry, pronouncing good things on him, and pronouncing good things on him. And he'll say today, "The reason that I have gone where I've gone, apart from the blessing of God directly upon my life, is the confidence and the encouragement and the blessing on my life pronounced by my mother." Larry Crabb, in his book entitled Encouragement, when his young man had a speaking impediment, he stuttered. And he was an officer in the class where he was in high school, and he was called to the front, and he had to be sworn in. And he had a problem with two letters, particularly in his stuttering. One was the letter L, and the other was the letter P. And so he had to say, "I, Larry Crabb, promise," and write on down in the oath. So the principal of the school read through it, and Larry, just fluently, of course, and Larry started through, and when he did, he said, "I, Larry Crabb, do solemnly promise." And when he did that, people, some began to snicker. Some began to feel very uncomfortable. His English teacher, who had put him up for the award, was just decimated, and he was crushed. And he said, "Right then, I knew that I would never speak in public." In his church, shortly after that, they were having a youth week. They called him up to lead in the closing prayer. By this time, he was already crushed. And as he began to speak in the prayer. He didn't know if he was addressing God, the congregation, whoever. He was absolutely frightened out of his wits because he was so afraid that he would start stuttering again. He was thinking more about avoiding L's and P's than he was talking to God. And when he finished, he said, not only did I know that I would never speak in public again, I would never do anything religiously again before anyone else. And he said as he walked out after the end of the service, one of the old gentlemen came to him, put his arm around his neck, his shoulder, and said these words to him. He said, Larry, I want you to know that anything that you attempt for God, we're behind you 100% all the way. And Larry, as he wrote those words in his book, he says, as I write these words, tears come to my eyes. Because if you know Larry Crabb, he makes his living speaking to literally thousands of people, doing religious seminars and encouragement seminars and motivational seminars all over our country. What happened? A man just unintentionally, but because he was a man of God, sensitive to the young man, walked over and put his arm around him and he said, I want you to know we're behind you 100%. And what he did with those words, he blessed Lawrence Crabb. And Lawrence Crabb has now become a blessing to thousands and multiplied thousands of people. I want you to know that your words can be constructive. I want to give you three areas where they can build somebody up. You write these down. I've already talked about the first one. It's in the area of encouragement. Encouragement. You can be an encourager to someone. Who do you know that you've run across in the last few days that that they're just sort of down in the mouth? They're discouraged. Maybe they're standing off in a corner somewhere, stirring a cup of coffee at the student center, and they just keep stirring that cup of coffee. They've stirred it for 5 minutes. Listen, I want to tell you something, folks. When you see somebody doing that, you better understand that person is struggling. They're having a hard time. They're not over there in isolationism because that's what they choose to be. They're in need of encouragement. Look at that guy or that young lady walking across the campus with their heads down. And the time you see them, they're the same way. Almost like they're alone. What do they need? They need for somebody to walk up beside them and say, hi, I'm Claude Thomas. I've seen you around several times. Try to get into their world a little bit, not because you're nosy, not because you just want to break in, but because you want to be a blessing where you can say a word of encouragement to that person's life. Folks, you have one of the greatest opportunities that God has ever given anybody to be an encourager. I lived on a college campus. It wasn't like this one, but I lived on one. I was in seminary and lived as a commuter on a seminary campus. I tell you, I know that people on our campuses, we may walk around with a plastic smile and somebody, how's everything? How's things going? Oh, they're going great. Man, they're great. They're wonderful. They're wonderful. They're wonderful. And you dine in line. Right? Inside, hurting. We need encouragement from one another. Be sensitive. Be sensitive to others. Be sensitive to the Spirit of God and allow Him to use you to communicate a positive and powerful word that will help set the direction. You don't know what you'll do for somebody else. Do you think that that old gentleman who put his arm around Lawrence Crabtree, or Lawrence Crabb thought when he said that he was helping establish the direction of Lawrence Crabb's life? Why, no. He was just doing what came naturally to him, supernaturally natural. Encouragement. Secondly, and I'll put these in terms so you can keep up with them, is the word education. But we're really talking there about discipleship. There are many young people who come to a college campus, lived in isolationism in a church somewhere, incubated in the home, a Christian home, maybe even gotten through high school. Oh, yeah, I know some of the statistics. But, folks, let me remind you that all these statistics talk about 50% of the seniors in high school being in parties and drinking and doping and sex and all that. 50% of them or 60%. Remind yourself that there's another percentage that's not involved in that. You know, we talk about all those who are, but what about all those who are not? And they come on the college campus. They've never been away from home. They've never been outside of the do's and the don'ts of mom and papa. And suddenly, here's this big world. Well, you can go down to the frat house and you can find booze, big deal. You don't have to go far. You can find anything, party, whatever. There they are. Listen, the young brother or sister, the young Christian who comes to a college campus needs somebody to get shoulder to shoulder with them and disciple them. Encourage them. Help them to grow in their relationship to Christ. It's not that there's anybody that's a super saint and the others are struggling saints. We're all struggling saints. We just need to struggle together. Third thing, evangelize. You want to be a blessing and use the spoken word? Evangelize. Tell somebody else about Jesus. Out here, somewhere, in your classroom, in your dorm, in your fraternity, sorority, somebody that you play intramural sports with, somebody is looking to find answers to the issues they're facing and solutions to the problems of their life. And the greatest answer to life's dilemma, supreme solution to life's problem, is found in the person of Jesus Christ. And it's at that point you can have an enormous impact. Who here on this campus at this time can God use you to be a blessing to? If you're in the field of education, you may see this film. Story about a boy by the name of Roger. The film is entitled A Zypher in the Snow. How many of you have seen it? Have you seen it? For those of you not, let me just tell you what happened, basically. It's recounted, a little boy standing over here, out in a rural section of the country somewhere, kicking around in the snow. The other kids, they're picking up the snow and making snowballs and throwing it against the fence. They're having a big time running around. But this little boy, he's standing over here by himself, just kicking around in the snow. The school bus comes up. When it does, all the kids rush on to get their seat. Little Roger, he goes up and he just sort of carries himself up, gets a hold of the pole, goes in and sits down right behind the bus driver. The bus driver turns around, sees everybody seated. He reaches over and he pulls the door shut and the door shuts. He drives off. The next thing that disturbs him is this little boy that was sitting behind him is now standing up, gasping, making all kinds of noises, holding on to the pole. The driver tries to get him to sit down. He won't sit down. And half out of frustration and half out of concern, he stops the bus. And he opens the door. And when he does, the little boy steps out of the bus and falls face forward into the snow. The worst fears come across the bus driver, and he jumps out of the bus and he tries to start helping the little boy. But when the ambulance and the people arrive, his worst fears are confirmed. The little boy's dead. A concerned school teacher begins to delve into the background of this little boy. Here's what she found out. She found out, number one, that there was no physical reason for Roger to die. They did autopsies. There was no physiological reason for him to die. Number two, she found out that he was a pretty good student for a while, and something happened. She discovered what happened was there was a split in his family. His mom and dad divorced. His mom married again. When she did, she married a man who was very possessive of her and rejected the little boy. The mother was sensitive and she'd try to make up for Roger not having any attention. But soon she gave in to Roger's stepfather and her new husband and gave all her attention to him. Roger began to withdraw in the classroom. The teacher began to work with him and tried to get him out of himself and do well in the classroom. And finally she gave up and set Roger off by himself as an incorrigible. The friends that he once had tried to reach out to him, but he was now so withdrawn that he withdrew himself even more. And Roger lived in a confused, lonely world of silence. And he died because of it. There are people who are living in a world of silence. And they need somebody to say a word of blessing to them. A positive word of encouragement, instruction, direction to the Lord. A good word that comes from your heart and reaches into their life. Will you be that person on this campus, for Jesus' sake?